Hello, my name is Philip Bain. I'm the Managing Director of Smart Cities Council. Today I have Michael Jansen, the CEO of City Zenith. City Zenith is sponsoring our Digital Twin Workshop in Orlando on October 4th and 5th. And if you're interested in participating either in person or virtually, please go to our website. Hey, good morning, Michael. It's great to see you or hear you as we are because we're doing a podcast. So we're here to talk about digital twins and how cities can use this kind of technology. Maybe you can start by telling me if digital twins is even the right word that I should be using.
Well, thanks for having me, Philip. I'm really looking forward to the event in Orlando coming up and meetings with so many cities to talk about our work and their work and look at the work of others in this space. We'll get to digital twins, and thank you for mentioning it. It's very important. I think we should focus first on what they do. And what digital twins do is they solve real-world problems in cities, and we as a company happen to focus on building decarbonization, net zero things, and we'll get to that, but they solve real problems. They allow you to use your existing architecture and tools. So your GIS tools, your BIM tools, your spreadsheets, you're not going to get rid of those. Those will be a part of the new equation, as it were. And the models are changing around how these types of technologies get adopted, which we'll talk about later. But where companies like ours have developed a model that allows cities to use this technology and build on it in perpetuity for free, because it's kind of a modular approach, much like the iPhone, where there are free apps that the city uses and develops for its use and others, and then there are apps that are paid for
No,
that.
I'm really, you're grabbing my interest when you use the word free, but I'm a little bit older, so I'm going to be a little bit skeptical until we get there. But
Sure.
so if I'm in the city, I'm the chief technical officer, or even let's say I head the public works, why would I be interested in what kind of problems can digital twins solve for me?
Well, it is technically almost no limit to the number of problems they can solve. Dr. Michael Greaves, who is credited as being a mastermind in this space and early sort of coiner of the term digital twin, said that there are thousands of use cases that he has seen and had developed over his course of his 20-something year career in the space. But in cities, there's a lot of things that are happening. We're seeing them used in our case for things like building decarbonization. It's a very complex technical process that involves a lot of different types of data from a lot of different stakeholders, and then analytics that are monitored over a period of time. Well, traditional tools don't do that, and the digital twins allow you to do that. There's a use case for firefighters that we're working on in a couple of cities where the digital twin is being used as a resource for information inside the building so that
Ah.
in the firehouse itself, firefighters can look at a digital twin of a property that's on fire and be able to see all the different floors, the layouts from by downloading drawings or looking at a 3D model itself, and even
So
getting
this would be
access.
a visualization of what's going on, what happens inside the building to help me help people or save them or do whatever.
The combination of the visualization and access to other information tools like floor plans and things based upon
Gotcha.
availability.
Okay.
But the key thing is that having access to the floor plans tells you things like because they have it from the building department, which walls were fire rated for 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours. So you can plan access and egress from a fire. You'd be shocked to know that most firefighters in American and European cities are lucky to have just the lobby level drawing of a skyscraper when they go into it, so it's a very serious thing. Another digital twin use case, mobility planning. I've seen them used to determine the ideal location of a curb cut, which means where you access a property from like a downtown urban core multi use property that has ways in and ways out. You could actually optimize where that belongs based upon people flow, vehicular flow, access to and from local transit hubs. So digital twins are doing all kinds of things right now, and the future is bright. The key thing is helping to get cities comfortable with one use case and early use of the technology in a way which makes sense to them. But I think we're seeing enough good experiments right now to begin to build confidence.
So, in other words, a city can start with one use case like the EMS or solving a traffic congestion, or they want to measure and predict the use of or the emission of carbon, either from transportation or buildings or some other source. So they don't have to do it all at once. Is that the idea?
That's right. You know, the key thing is here that digital twins are not you buy it all this off the shelf and install it thing. They are an evolution of technology. They're an evolution of implementation. They can start on a city block and they can build off from there to cover the entire city. So they can start with one use case and end up with hundreds of use cases over time with thousands of users. So what will happen, though, I believe this is it's important to understand, is that it would be best if the technology evolves over the next 3, 5, and 7 years, because there's a lot of real world learning to be done. What you're seeing is cities that have use cases that are more urgent, as it were, looking hard at this technology, right? Whether it's around decarbonization or flood risk or other issues like that. Operations and maintenance.
So they can solve real world problems. And I remember we worked with the city of Nashville and used analytics and visualization to help sort of figure out where future flooding was. But I think a big issue for a lot of cities is going to be, and you mentioned this earlier, what about my existing architecture, my existing solutions? And, you know, how do I get from where I am today to a world where I'm using more visualization and analytics and machine learning? How do I get there?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. And a lot of technology leaders will say, well, isn't this just another product? Isn't it just another something we have to learn, et cetera? The difference with digital twins is that they work in between, on top of and underneath all of your existing products to embellish them and make them more useful, in addition to giving you new capabilities that you've never had before. So you don't have to throw out your GIS. You keep all of your GIS. In fact, keep it updated. You certainly don't shut down your open data portals. I mean, those are a critical source of data for digital twin platforms. Existing design and planning tools, BIM tools, CAD, et cetera, all those will continue to be used and will continue to form part of the ecosystem. And we think that the use of digital twins actually even drive the further adoption of some of these existing technologies that have hit technology walls over the last 5, 10, and 15, 20 years. But it's key to understand that digital twins are different from all of these. A digital twin technology at its heart is an architecture. You know, we have at Cities Inc. developed a technology key to what we call our platform technology, Smart World. And we're releasing Smart World OS 3 coming up in the summer of next year. But the key, the underlying wisdom, our secret sauce and all that, is an IP we've developed called the Knowledge Graph. And the Knowledge Graph is effectively the glue that unites this entire ecosystem of data to a 3D object model. So in other words, all of these different data points around population, traffic movement, air pollution, et cetera, suddenly have a place in space and time in a city model. And that's the architecture that enables an entire ecosystem of applications to be built using that data now, which is now structured and taken out of its native format and put into one that basically anybody can use, because now it's a point in space and time with a number.
So Michael, I have a background in semantic technology, so I'm totally familiar with knowledge graphs. Mm. And this is what Google is using, Facebook is using. So to a great extent now, what you're talking about, and when you use the word models, you're talking about building out a representational model, what's called an ontological model of a city and its infrastructure. And my understanding of that is that's what really future-proofs. You can add more data sets and you can bring in more applications over time, right?
Absolutely right. And you just use the word ontology, which is key. And for people who don't know what the word ontology means, that is effectively a naming of the hierarchy of the elements of the knowledge graph. So the ontology would be assigning the order of things, for example, city, district, block, building, floor, room, object. So, and these ontologies then are become standard, so allows all other tools to plug into. And there's been some really great work done on ontology by the City Protocol folks and the University of Toronto that we've been studying for a long time. And we think you're absolutely right, because none of this will work unless there is a core universally interoperable knowledge architecture that allows all these things to plug in at whatever scale.
And that's something that a city could grab from another city. These models are, you can port them. Now, you know, look at, we just did what we promised ourselves we wouldn't do. When you use the word ontology, you're guaranteeing that you're going to confuse somebody, and that and they're going to go, okay, so how much does an ontology cost, right? Man, this must be really expensive. So what I really want to talk about now, ending up this short podcast, is, you know, why cities should be talking to you, because I think your business model is really one of the most distinctive aspects of what you're offering. So let's talk about that some.
Yeah, you're right. The our chief technology officer, Prashant Bose, was head of digital twin at Lockheed Martin, and he sometimes just makes me drift into areas, and he'd make you do the same thing. But all that means to put together enables the business model, right? The universal architecture allows us to do things that that haven't been done before. In our model, we provide the core architecture, the platform and its architecture, to cities free of cost. In fact, we invest in the development of that digital twin for that city up to about $250,000 per city. We've already signed on four cities. We are going to be unveiling at least half of those cities by Q2 or Q3 of next year. And there's another four or five cities that we'd like to bring on board, because we'd like to do a lot of shared learning at this stage and really try to get some movement behind this idea of a common architecture. So what we do is we actually pay for it. We build it, and then cities become free users. All these different agencies I mentioned, they are free to use our SDK to build applications, or more commonly, honestly, we get contacted by universities that have the research departments that are working in partnership with cities to take on certain projects. And they're always looking for what we provide, which is that universe of data and structure. So I see the cities building on applications department by department. And as there are things that will move from that could, and their, say, constituents and or researchers will be building these things out, or you will have companies building these things out and putting them out there. You know, it'll be a free ecosystem of tools. And that's important.
Let me sort of, Michael, respectfully wrap this up in the sense, I really want to focus on this business model. So if a city comes to you and says, we're really interested, you're coming forward and you have a wealth of experience. You have these data models that we were talking about already in place. And so what you do is you look at their existing data architecture and you see where you can integrate it with your models, and you're willing to do up to $250,000 of this integration and application work so as to give them what we would call a working model. Is that accurate?
That's right. And then that we enable the city, and we monetize the platform by selling certain modules to private stakeholders in the city. We happen to focus on the building industry. So we have modules for building owners, facility managers, so on and so forth, that are paid. And so they get a different value. The nice thing about digital twins is the modular approach is that each module provides different value. Okay. So that's the beautiful thing. So much like apps on your iPhone, there are free apps that you use that provide value to you, tell you what the weather is, give you some news, et cetera. Those are valuable free apps. There are some you have to pay for because the value.
You can sort of consume it at your own speed. And for a good part of it, especially at the beginning when you're building it out, it's not going to cost you. So if nothing else, a city that's interested in solving some of these real world problems, and they have an existing architecture with data sets and BIM, they have different agencies, so they have different ways of probably managing that data. But you now can use your ontological, what we call a semantic model, to integrate these different data sets, and you can do it literally at no cost to the city for an agreed period of time. So in other words, Oh, and you know, the last thing we hadn't really talked about, and let's end on this, is the fact that all this technology has been around for a while.
That's right. You know, digital twins are, and the underlying technology or the idea is certainly not new. The idea has been around for 20 years. You know, I would say that some of the technologies in the stack needed to execute correctly are brand new, and some have been around. And so it's really an amalgam of things that are absolutely cutting edge, which things that have been there for 20 to 50 years, and that's cities. So it's, I think, kind of in closing on this, that, this is a great opportunity for any city to get in with almost no risk, a high quality product that they can experiment with and learn from in partnership with other cities, also doing the experiment at the same time to almost, frankly, almost eliminate your risk. And God forbid, if it works out well, you've done something brilliant and you've got a leg up on everybody else. Good for you.
Right. Oh no, that's fantastic. So Michael, I really look forward to seeing you in Orlando, but let's
You
just
bet.
if there's any city out there or organization, it could be a utility, it could be a Department of Transportation, it could be a sub agency within a city or a county or a state. If they just reach out to you, you could have a conversation with them. What's your email address?
You can send it to me directly, it's fine. It's M for Michael dot Jansen at citiesenith.com.
Jansen, correct?
Jansen at
At
citiesenith.com.
cityzenith.com. So great. Hey, thank you for your time today, Michael. I really appreciate it. Again, look forward to seeing you in about 10 days in Orlando.
You too, Phil. Thank you.